My name is Yana Owens, and I'm interviewing Jack Vincelli via Skype to his home in Canada on Wednesday, March 28, 2012. Jack graduated from the North Carolina State University School, now College, of Design in 1960 with a degree in landscape architecture. He has been in practice for over 50 years. I know he has many interesting stories to tell us. So, Jack, are you ready for some questions?
I'm ready for some questions.
Oh, that sounds great. Okay, the first one is, tell me a little bit about where you grew up and how you got interested in landscape architecture.
Well, I grew up in Montreal, and of course my father was a landscape contractor, a very well-known contractor, landscape contractor, and I saw the, you know, the works of other landscape architects he worked with, and of course it gravitated towards me wanting to be one of those guys, and I really enjoyed when they would show me their plans, and then my father would do the construction. His men would be out there with the machinery and so on. He did large projects, large residential projects, mm-hmm. and which means that, you know, he was equipped with bulldozers and back diggers and a lot of machinery, and so I was quite impressed by all of that, and that's why I wanted to become a landscape architect. So one of the landscape architects, a man by the name of Louis Perron, who was by the name a French Canadian, who went to Cornell, and he was telling me about Cornell and the School of Design there and so on. So I went there for the first year, but I wasn't impressed with it. It was teaching one to be more as a landscape contractor than really as a landscape architect, and to design rather than just to build.
Right.
I had really known enough about, well, I felt at the time, I knew enough about landscape construction that I wanted to get into design.
Right.
So from Cornell, Ithaca, New York, I found out about North Carolina State and that they had a good school of design and that architects, landscape architects, and product designers were all working together on various projects and so on. And I thought that sounded more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I got on a train and I came down to Raleigh, and I heard, y'all come see us here. And I didn't understand a damn thing they were saying. And I said, oh my God, where have I come now? How will I ever learn?
What year was this, Jack? What year? What year was this?
Well, that would have been about 1955.
Still a lot of red clay back then, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was great. I enjoyed it. And I found that the southern person was just someone I really wanted to work with and be with and so on. I really enjoyed them. I loved them dearly.
Oh, that's wonderful. Do you remember the first time you met Dean Henry Kampfner? Did you meet him on that first trip down here?
Yeah, I met with Mr. Thurlow. Edwin G. Thurlow, who was head of the landscape architectural department at that time.
Right.
And then, of course, he introduced me to Dean Kampfner and so on. And that's how I then eventually I met with Lewis, which was so interesting, and I was in his class. As a matter of fact, in the first years where we were down there in the basement of the school of design. No, actually, sorry. We started in the, what do you call those? The barracks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Yona, if you know of anything about the barracks.
Oh, I've seen pictures and heard people
anybody
talk.
Anybody tell you anything about that? Well, that's where I started, actually, in the barracks.
Uh-huh.
That was before, and at that time, the School of Design, where it presently is, was just, they were doing all the renovations of the, what's the name of that building now?
Brooks,
right. And they were renovating and cleaning up all the old stuff and that, and they were getting it ready for architects, landscape architects, and product designers.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we were, our classes for sculpturing and painting and that kind of thing was in the barracks.
Ah.
And then it was during that first year that we moved into the present Brooks building, which is now, I understand, called Dean Kampfhefner.
It's still Brooks Hall, and there's a Matsumoto wing, and then there's a section that has Kampfhefner's name on it. It's brand new. It's all changed since you were here, Jack. But I want to get back to whenever you got here was in 50, would be 55, right?
1955, yep.
And I think you were one of the married students when you arrived, is that right?
What's that?
You were married at the time when you got here?
When I got down there, no, I was not married. No, at 1950, I got married in 1958.
Ah, so we got a couple of years to cover here before we get to
that's
that.
That's right. And so I remember I stayed in the fourth dorm,
uh-huh,
which was a little building that was God knows how old. I don't remember when they built it, but it was old. And it was, it's present, I think it's still there, located right next to the School of Design.
Yeah, there's still some there. Well,
Isn't that little building still there?
I think so.
Yeah, and it was called a fourth dorm.
Okay. Was there a set of buildings around called Vetville? Was that still there?
Yes. It was. There were a lot of guys that were coming back from the Korean War.
Right.
Because the Korean War was like 1950. And a lot of boys were coming back into school at that time in 1955. So yes, there was Vetville, and they all lived out there. And
where was it?
Some of them had trailers. They lived in house trailers. Like when I got married in 1958, Lucia and I bought a house trailer, 42 feet long, 8 feet wide, And we located just about within the city limits, within the 1 mile city limits of Raleigh.
Uh-huh.
And lo and behold, I don't know if I ever told you that story, Yona.
No, I don't think so.
Where we lived in this trailer, and I was at school at that time. I was, physically studying at school. And I get a call from my wife saying there's a bailiff at our door.
Uh-oh.
And he wants us to move out of here. And so, because the guy that I rented the spot, the location to put my trailer, was by this man by the name of Henry Moran. And he was not supposed to have a trailer park within the city limits of Raleigh.
Right.
And so the bailiff was there, and he handed us an eviction paper to get out of there. And so I came back and came home, and there we found another place, Mendelssohn's, Mendelssohn, I believe, Trailer Park, which is further down the road, outside of the city limits, of course.
Right.
And we made a deal with someone out there, that Mr. Mendenhall, Mendenhall, yeah. And he had a place for us, so I got a guy, but I'll never forget it, a guy that had, his name was Tex, and he had a truck that had, just like they do in Texas, I guess, with horns built onto the front of his truck. And he came to load us up, to hook up my trailer and bring us to Mendenhall's trailer park.
Uh-huh.
Never forget that. It was very funny.
Oh, my gosh.
It wasn't funny at the time.
No, I guess not.
It's funny now. But anyway, so we had to, we stayed there in Mendenhall, and we stayed there for about a year, if I remember correctly. My wife remembers everything much more than I do. Anyway, we stayed there, and then we were able to get back into Mr. Moran's trailer park, because they had changed rulings that he could have a trailer park within the city limits, because students were coming back from all over, and they needed to put their trailers, house trailers,
right,
there somewhere. So they allowed us to go back into, there was a spot ready for us, and in we went, and there we stayed for the 5 years or 4 years left.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we made our...
Well, what did Lucia do while you were in classes?
Lucia kept me in line. She kept me in line and told me exactly where I had to be, and when I said, how high do I have to jump, and she,
right,
you know, how high, and I would jump, and I would do whatever.
Wow.
And she kept me in line. And then we had a daughter born, well, 9 months later.
Mm-hmm.
And there we were, and she was bringing up the baby, and then we had a situation where our daughter didn't quite like the regular milk feeding that they fed babies in those days, and that she just kept projectly sending milk out the from her mouth, and she... Uh-huh. So we had to find out what is going to stay down and keep her alive, actually. And we found out Lucia went to, we went to a doctor, and the doctor said, well, Lucia, what did you have in Italy? What did you drink? And she said, well, I drank goat's milk. And she said, okay, well, that's what we're going to try. We're going to try goat's milk.
I'll be darned.
And sure enough, my daughter loved goat's milk.
Mm-hmm.
And carried on for the rest of her baby years, and she drank goat's milk.
Wow.
And Mr. Clark was sweet enough to give me a part-time job there at his basement.
Right.
So that I could keep up with paying 85 cents a can for that Mayenberg goat's milk.
Oh my gosh.
Well, money that I did. Money I didn't have, and thank God for Lewis to give me some work so that he could pay me, and so on. I'll never forget that.
God bless Lewis. That is amazing.
And Lewis said to me, which I the last time we were there, well, you were there too when we came through, weren't you?
Not too many years ago, right?
Well, about two. Well, I think it's about 4 years ago, I guess.
Yes.
That we stopped, weren't you there?
I think I did come by for just a little bit, yes.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I was remembering a story that let Lewis... Oh, but I forget it now. It'll come back later.
Well, let's go back to... To the story here. The landscape architecture degree, as you mentioned, was a 5-year program, and it was pretty grueling.
That's right.
During the first 2 years, the landscape architecture and architecture students took the same courses. And
yeah.
I'd like to talk to you first about the architecture professors that you had. Do you recall any particular ones, and why do you recall those?
Well, one of the questions that you had asked me, or you had put down on a piece, said, what made me decide to attend North Carolina State? And because I had heard from a landscape architect, another landscape architect, who had attended, that was the same Miss Louis Perron chap that had told me after I had come back from Cornell, and he said, well, if you don't like Cornell, maybe you would like North Carolina State.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time I had heard really about the school design there, and so I came down there and met with everybody, and so there I was. And you got where it was where I interviewed by Dean Kamphefner when I transferred from Cornell to North Carolina State. I was interviewed by what's his name, Thurlow, and then he brought me over to meet Kamphefner.
Mm-hmm.
Kamphefner was quite a guy. He was another chap that had, I got all these little innuendo stories in between that I want to tell you.
Okay.
He got me to run the Osland machine up on the second or third floor, if I remember correctly. And he gave me this job because, again, I needed to... needed to pick up money wherever I could, and he gave me this job to run the Osler machine, and all of the professors and used to come over and they'd give me their drawings to run Oslers and get run copies of these plans that they had drawn.
Mm-hmm.
And he was paying me something like about $2.50 an hour, which at that time
was pretty
great.
Good, yeah.
Oh boy, I was in heaven. And anyway, one day he comes along and he says, Jack, I gotta take the job away from you. He says, I don't think you really need it. And I said,
uh-oh.
Why? He said, well, because I saw your mother and father come through here because they had on their way down to Florida, and they stopped to see me in Raleigh, and of course came by to pick me up at the School of Design.
Right.
And well, they saw my father driving a big Cadillac and my mother wearing a fur coat and so on. And,
uh-oh.
And so he thought that, well, I don't think Jack really needs his. There are other students that need it than him.
Yeah.
And I said, no, Dean, I'm sorry, but I'm not asking my father for any help in paying for anything for my school.
Uh-huh.
And so I said, I need it, and I have a daughter to bring up and so on. And he said, well, but you want me to talk to your parents about getting money for you? And I said, no, I don't need you to do that. I just don't want them to. Anyway... So he laid me off and gave the job to another guy where he said that this guy, I know, had no mother and had no father and I don't know what. And so he gave this guy that job. Now, I'll never forget, his name was Roy Minshew or something. I think that was his name. Anyway, so the boy, but he would never show up on time. And was never very cooperative with anybody. So the dean had a lot of complaints.
Mm.
So the dean came back to me one day and said, Jack, how would you like to have your job back? I said, I have no ego. I will be very more than happy to take my job back. And so he did, and I got it, and I carried on. And that was Dean Kamphefner. Another time I had I had a kind of funny little thing with the dean. I thought that I should have come time for close to graduating, and I thought that graduating certificate, that I should have my name Jack Vincelli, as I was known and very well known by that.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, he said, so what's on your birth certificate is going down on that certificate. And on the certificate, he insisted that Saverio Giacomo Vincelli was going to be put down. And I said, oh, Dean, I said, but nobody knows me by that. And he said, take a look on the wall there, and you see my certificate up there? I said, yeah, I see yours. He says, what do you see? How do you see my name there? And what it was Henry Lieke Kamphefner.
Right.
Henry L stood for L-E-I-C-K-E, something like that. And he
I think
said,
it's L-E-V-E-K-E, something like that.
Yeah, something
right.
like that.
But that was his
and
name
said,
up there.
Do you think that anybody knew me by that name? And he says, and my dean made me put down that name on my certificate.
Right.
The same thing is that I am forcing you to put down what your real name is, which is Saverio. What's the second name, he said? I said, Giacomo. I said, you see, Dean, you don't even know. And he said, I will not put anything else on that. Say, oh, yeah, I just won't. I just won't give you the certificate, that's all,
no.
If you insist.
Yeah.
And I said, well, if you put it that way, Dean, I'll take it. I'll do it that way. Anyway, so that was my two little stories with Dean Kamphefner,
right.
of my interviewing with Dean Kamphefner.
Well,
anyway,
you lucked out, because some people have talked about him being a real taskmaster and quite abusive and abrasive, but then comes back and does something really nice for you and, you know,
yeah,
makes you feel good.
That's right.
Amazing
that's
man.
Right.
Well, what about Willie Bumgarner or Horacio Camino?
I met Professor Bumgarner. I met him once or twice. I didn't really meet him very often. I remember him, though. He was a professor emeritus, if I remember correctly,
mm-hmm.
at that time. But I didn't know him well. I never really spoke to him.
Did you have
But
Camino's?
I loved Dean Kamphefner. I really did.
Oh, it sounds like it. And
he was
great. A character. Well, how about Camino's, Horacio Camino's? Did you have him for any classes?
Camino's, yes. I didn't have any classes with Camino's, but I knew Catalano better.
Ah, what was he
yeah.
like?
Well, I told him, I said, you're Italian and I'm Italian, so I think we... And he said, no, but I don't know if he came from Venezuela or somewhere.
I think
but
Argentina.
But it was an Italian name.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, coming from Venezuela.
Right.
Or something. I'm not sure where he came from. But anyway, he was great. And the remark he made, I'll never forget, when... near the stadium, there is a structure that was designed by, I believe, the architectural office. No, I don't know who really designed that, but anyway, he made a remark about it that it looked like the. He was so cute the way he would say his words. He said, it's like the feet of an elephant holding up the wings of a butterfly. So that was his criticism of it.
Right.
That it just didn't relate.
Yeah.
That here were these huge structures holding up this very thin butterfly-type roof.
I'll have to look into that. I don't know if that structure still exists anymore.
You know what? I wonder if it the feet of an elephant.
Yeah.
Holding up the wings of a butterfly.
Very descriptive. Well, how about Charlie Kahn? Do you remember Charlie Kahn?
What's that?
Charlie Kahn, K-A-H-N. Was he
no,
was there.
No, I never did. No, I never met him, no.
Or Cecil Elliott?
Yes, Cecil Elliott I did. Yeah, we had him as a professor. I was more close to Roy Gusso.
Ah.
Oh, Roy Gusso was, I wonder if he's still alive.
No, he's unfortunately passed away in the last couple of years ago.
And about a couple of years ago?
Yeah, no
oh,
longer
really?
With us, yeah.
Oh, he was great. I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
How about George Matsumoto?
And George Matsumoto, yes.
Now, did he teach a class for landscape that you took?
No, he did not teach a class to us landscape architects. You know, of 40 people that started out in 1955, that started out registered in landscape architecture, 40 people, three of us, only three, finally graduated.
Is that good to have that kind of washout rate?
What's that?
Is it good, do you think, to have that kind of washout rate?
Oh, I thought it was great. I felt very special.
I guess so.
Well, I got to tell you the truth. Yeah, and the three were myself, Jimmy Klutz.
Right.
And Max Evans.
No kidding.
Yep. And I'll never forget the first time I met Jimmy Klutz. And I said, Jimmy, what does Klutz mean in German?
Uh-huh.
And he says, a bleep word, and he said, it means the same damn thing it means in English. I said, you mean you've been a klutz all your life? And he said, yes, I've been a klutz all. So, yeah, that's what it means. Klutz.
I think you two were friends when you said that, right?
Oh, of course, we were great friends.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Jimmy and I, we talk on the telephone right up to, you know, recently, you know.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah, we keep in touch.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, I was asking you about the architect professors because I know that in the fall of 1958, students went all over the state doing as-built architecture drawings of 1700s and 1800s era buildings.
Yes,
now,
yes.
Do you remember anything about the course or who guided that project? Because we have some drawings of yours from that project. It's there. We have four of them. It says there's seven, but we have four of Old St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Catawba County.
Yes, yes, yes.
Do you remember
that?
That.
Yes,
what
and
that
the guy
all about?
The guy I worked with on that was what was his name? Wilkinson.
Really? Was it Wilkinson that headed that up?
No, it was Richard. What was his first name?
Dick Wilkerson was around at that time.
Okay, so it was him that he asked me. He said, "Would you like to work together on that project?" And we went to his hometown in North Carolina. I forget.
Newton? Was it Newton, North Carolina?
Newton, right? Newton, North Carolina. Absolutely. How do you know all that, Joe?
We just are good in special collections. We just know these things.
That's great. That's great. Well, he and I measured up this church. Yeah, and we drew that up. And is that an exhibit? It's still existing?
Yeah, and it was part of the project. Eventually was called the Historic Architecture Research Project.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And not too long ago, I mean, in the last 3 to 5 years, NCSU's Library Special Collections Research Center digitized. There's hundreds of drawings of buildings, you know, historic buildings across North Carolina that you guys went out and drew between 1951 and 76.
Yeah.
And so those are online. You can go to the library's website and see digital images online.
That's great.
And you can forget, click on it. It says signed by Jack Vincelli on those four.
Oh, my gosh.
Saint
you know, that's going to be worth millions of dollars.
Oh, of course.
So you got to keep that down. That's very important, Yona.
Well, tell me about Wilkinson.
Yeah, I wonder where he is now.
I don't know. But now, he was in landscape architecture, right?
That's right. That's right.
So how did the landscape art? I mean, the drawings by the landscape architecture students are very professional looking. They look like you've been trained as architects.
Yes, right. But he didn't graduate. Wilkinson did not graduate. I don't know what he did. I think he changed or he went off somewhere. I don't know what whatever happened.
We'll have to check that out. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. All right, what's your next question?
Well, let's see here. I wasn't really quite finished with that one, but I was just wondering if it was a project that you did in the summertime, right, rather than a course that you did.
Yes, it was.
And then you did the drawings in
We
in that
did
fall.
It during the summertime, and I remember that my father was very angry at me that I didn't come home that summer because he needed me to give prices and quotations for landscape construction work that he was, you know, bidding on, and he needed me there beside him, and I was down there drawing up churches in Newton, North Carolina.
I'll never
forget the first time I called my father when I got down to Raleigh. He didn't know where I was, and I said, "Dad, I'm in North Carolina. What are you doing in North Carolina? What are you doing in California?" I said North Carolina. He took it as California.
Right.
And I said, no, Dad, California is on the other side, on the other side of the continent. I says, I'm still not far away from you. I'm just on this side of the continent. But he didn't want to hear any of that nonsense. He just wanted me to get my butt back to Montreal to do some work.
Right.
Because he was very active in landscape construction.
Right. Well, yeah, I'm glad you took the summer off because we do have a nice, very nice drawing.
Great.
Two elevations and a floor plan. So you guys had to really know what you were doing to take all those as-built measurements.
It's oh, my God,
pretty
yeah.
Pretty phenomenal for student work.
Absolutely, Yona, absolutely. But, you know, because they have Wilkinson's and my signature on it. You gotta hold on to that drawing because that's worth its weight in gold.
Right. Well,
and,
let's see.
And
here.
one day you're gonna say, "Yeah, that's the famous Jack Vincelli and Dick Wilkinson."
There we go.
Yeah.
There we go. Well, let's see here. After the first 2 years of the program, the landscape architecture students moved into their own track of courses. And product design went their way, and architecture went their way. And so you said there were 40 people that started out in your particular class, but who were some of the landscape architecture students in the school with you? Because I understand, third year and fifth year people work together in the same studio as everybody else, right?
That's right.
Do you remember some of the other people in school with you?
Well, some of them. One was a fellow by the name of Bob Coles, C-O-L-E-S.
I don't know.
And I understand he's passed away.
Ah, okay.
And he was younger than I.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, he went to work for the TVA.
Uh-huh.
And I understand he passed away. And then there was another chap by the name of Jim Hubbard. And Jim Hubbard, I got from someone, one of my student friends, a chap by the name of Ron Thompson, who was in architecture. And Ronnie sent me a whole dissertation on Jim Hubbard. And that really struck me because I really wanted to see that guy again. He was He was just a great fella, Jim Hubbard. he was sweet. He came here to Montreal. He visited. I brought him home to Montreal and
right.
Well, anyway, he has passed away. He went to Las Vegas to work there, and he also has passed away, which really, I don't like hearing things like that.
I know. Well, let's see, how about Warren Edwards? He's still very much alive right now. Do you remember Warren?
Yes, Warren is still alive. I did speak to him one time since. He's in Oklahoma.
Right.
Right. And he was a good friend of Charlie Burkett.
Who's still alive and kicking with us right now, too.
And he's still alive and kicking. Yeah, he's a kicker. but Warren Edwards, I haven't kept up a conversation or get together with him, but every once in a while I speak to Burkhead.
Right. And Jerry Turner, he has had a tremendously successful practice in North Carolina and South Carolina.
Yes, I think I heard that, Jerry Turner. Lindsey Cox.
A.B. Moore.
And A.B. Moore, gee whiz, you're bringing up names.
How about Kent Watson? Don't forget him.
Yeah, Kent Watson, that's
And we
right.
already said Max Evans, so we got him and Jimmy Klutz with you at the same graduating class.
Yeah, yep. Well, we were very close to Max Evans and Jimmy Klutz. We were together right through.
Did you?
You know, from first year right on up to fifth year, of course.
I noticed, of course, there's no women mentioned in this group.
What's that?
I noticed there's no women mentioned in this group.
No, well, there was one girl. Wait a minute now. What was her name? Oh, that's... But she wasn't in our class.
Mm-hmm.
She did... Because at that time... the girls were just not coming into our into that school at that time.
Right.
No, they were over at Peace and what was the name of that?
St. Mary's.
And St. Wright.
And Meredith.
St. Mary's. And what was the other one?
Meredith.
Meredith, right. I remember the. Yes, I remember that. Yeah, there was only one girl, I can't remember her name, and I believe she came into architecture, if I'm not mistaken, but I just don't remember.
We'll have to check that out.
As my
I don't remember it right
say,
now this minute either.
As my father used to say, you know, he didn't remember anything, he forgot.
That's right.
That's true.
Well, let's see here. We've already talked about... that there were two landscape architecture instructors, only two, between the time that you were there, between 55 and 60. And
yep.
One was Gil Thurlow, and who had been there since 1947. And Lewis had arrived in the fall of 1952.
You know, he was really a Canadian.
That's right. I think he was from Nova Scotia, actually, is where
he
was.
Yeah, he came from Nova Scotia. Where they built the that famous ship, that boat, that what was it called? Oh, very famous one that raced all these other boats. I forget the and from that village, from that town.
Really?
Gil was from. But whenever I said to him, you know. You're really a Canadian. I'm American.
Really?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
I've heard other people imitate his voice that way. It must be very close to the way he sounded. What was he like as an instructor?
He was good. He was of the from the old school, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lewis was way ahead of everybody. Lewis was just. He was a sweetheart. Lewis really knew how to put new ideas or make you think about new ideas. He just knew how. Lewis had a way of getting to you, how to make you think. That's what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Way to get you to think on your own as to, and not just tell you to do this, do that. He would say, think, you know.
Can you think of an example of like something that he would, like a situation where he would use his method?
I'm trying to think of something like that. Like, I haven't come up with anything. I'm a dead dunce.
You're doing great.
Yeah. I wish he was there with you.
Well, he's...
Because he would remind me of things that I know.
Well, we'll see how we can do that maybe in the future, but we'll persevere on this way this time. So you mentioned that he sometimes hired students to work on projects outside of class, and that you did some work for him. Do you remember the names of any of the projects you worked on?
Yeah, one comes to mind now. For instance, he arranged for us to get together with the architects and the product designers to do an overall planning for a university, a campus.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was really the most interesting project I had ever done. I don't know if he remembers that, but I don't remember the name of that project, to be honest with you, but I do remember that it was so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I know it was a campus.
Right.
A university campus. That's all I could really remember, you know.
Well, what was interesting about it?
Because it was working together with architects and product designers. That was the most interesting. That here we were, you know, each doing our own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Coordinating it together. That was, to me, was just phenomenal. You know, it was so much more important to do that kind of, because in the real world out there, all of my projects that I did the Olympics here in Montreal. Mm-hmm. When they came to Montreal. I did the Expo Grounds, the international expose that was here in Montreal in 1967.
Right.
And I did the layout for the whole thing, and it was that project, that campus, university campus project, that taught me how to get along with the architects that I had to, like, for instance, when the Olympics came. Mm-hmm. And they asked me to be the landscape architect for it, my job was, what they wanted me to, is that they wanted me to locate the Olympic stadium and the Olympic and the village.
Right.
You know, and so I wanted to do the exact opposite that the architect who they had hired from France, his name was Tibert, and he was an arrogant bastard, and it was very hard for me to get along with this guy.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I wanted to locate the stadium where the village is, and he and the village where the stadium, because where he located the stadium, it was in a hole.
Uh-huh.
off the main road. And down lower in a hole, and to me, that was the way the design of the village was a step type project. In other words, it just, you know, on both ends, it was a step down project. So I would put that in the hole and make it look like it's stepping right out of the hole.
Right.
And it would have been much more logical to do that kind of thing rather than put the stadium into that hole.
Mm-hmm.
So you did, and the where the stadium, where the village is, it was up on a hill. So by taking the stadium and putting it up on this hill, it would have been appreciated so much more. And there I was trying to exaggerate his building, mm-hmm. and you know, sort of work really for him to, and he wasn't appreciating it. Mm. Just didn't understand, and no, he wanted it. And he derogatively said, "I'm not going to let some gardener tell me where to put my buildings." Mm. Oh boy, mm-hmm. It was almost a fist fight. And Lewis never taught me about a fist fight with the architects. You know why? Because Lewis is an architect. That's and he said, "Jack, you're just bigger than those guys." But I had a hard time to put this man to understand. And anyway, but I was very close to the mayor of our town at that time. And it was that university campus project that taught me what I was going to get involved in when I had to deal with an architect who was the architect for the building.
Right.
What, you know, how I was going to be able to work together with people like that. And that was very fruitful, I think. It was a good project, and that was Lewis's idea.
Did the stadium in Montreal get placed where you wanted it to?
No, that stadium never got where I wanted. No.
Oh.
No. If you come to Montreal, I'd love to show you, and I know would agree, Jack, your idea was better. Mm. Because it just was one of those things. But he was one of those typical Frenchmen. The ones from France are very arrogant, and they're not the nicest people to deal with, that's for sure.
Right.
They're not cooperative. They feel they know everything and that you have to take second place to them.
Well, it varies from person to person, doesn't it? Well,
now,
I understand it wasn't unusual for the School of Design faculty and the students to spend time together outside of classes. And I've heard people describe it as being like part of a big family. You and Lucia got to know Lewis's wife at the time, Kit. Tell me a little bit about Kit.
Oh, she was a sweetheart. I loved Kit. When I really, really, really met Kit was when I would come in to work for Lewis in his basement there, and Kit would bring us coffee and tea and what have you, and she was a sweetheart. I remember her well. Yeah, that was nice. They were nice times, Yona. I really enjoyed those times.
Oh, it sounds like it. Well, back at school, there was an amazing list of visiting lectures came through. People like Mumford and Burley Marx and Ekbo, Royston, Bucky Fuller. I mean, the list just goes on and on. And Warren Edwards says that Nervi, the Italian engineer, that he came to lecture, but he didn't speak English. Do you remember that Nervi lecture?
No. Who was it that...
Louis Nervi, the Italian engineer?
No, but Luigi Nervi.
Right.
Luigi Nervi came to our school to give us a lecture. And I having the closest to an Italian name, and I don't speak Italian. If I do, I massacre it. God forbid. And anyway, the dean thought that I should meet with Nervy and so on. And we all met at someone's house. I don't know who it was. And I'll never forget when some student asked him a question such as, where do you get your ideas? And he said, do you have an artichoke?
he didn't speak English.
Yeah, and the kids, we all, an artichoke. I don't know. Anyway, the kid that, in the apartment that we were all meeting at, apparently in his refrigerator, he had an artichoke. So he brought it out and he gave it to Mr. Nervy, and Nervy pulled out his little pocket pen, I'll never forget, pocket knife, and he cut it in half, and he showed everybody, and he said, here, look at the structure of this artichoke. And we all, we didn't know what we were looking at. We were all, you know, young students wondering where the hell it, what was happening.
Right.
But anyways, he explained to us that you get ideas from nature and the structure of plant material, of fruits and vegetables and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so he was really very interesting, Luigi. But what I found very exciting, actually, well, it wouldn't mean anything to you or anyone, but it meant a lot to me, that whatever words of Italian that I knew, Luigi Nervy knew where my father, who was born in Italy, where he was born, where he was from just the words that I was using or the way I was saying it or God knows what. And he knew that my father came from a certain place, and he hit it right on the head. He was,
no kidding.
Yeah, it's very interesting, you know, that they could tell. I mean, you know, if I said to you, Yona, you know, with your accent, oh, I could tell you come from Newton, North Carolina. Well, that would blow your mind.
Right.
But in Italy, the dialects are so important. So, to that you know where people come from in Italy. You know.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Wow. And Nervy knew how.
Where do you come from anyway?
Oh, I'm from Charlotte originally.
Where?
Charlotte. It's west of Raleigh.
West of Raleigh?
Yeah.
What's the name of the town?
Charlotte.
Starwood?
Like Charlotte, Queen Charlotte of Mecklenburg County. Do you know Mecklenburg, Germany?
Oh, yeah, okay. I think I went through there one time.
Oh, I'm sure you have.
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
Well, where is your father from?
Well, he's from halfway between Rome and Naples, closer to the Adriatic side of the boot.
Ah, I see.
Halfway between, you know, you see where Rome is and you see where Naples.
Right.
Draw a line halfway between, and then draw it right over to the Adriatic, which is the other side. Rome, Naples are on the. I have to ask my wife. Rome and Naples are on the, forget the name of that ocean, that sea.
Right.
What's that?
Well, we can look it up, right?
People can look it up. Anyway, well, it's on the other side of the boot.
Right.
Well, yeah.
Let me ask you this. I'm not sure, but I think that your family owns a large nursery in the Montreal area. Is that right?
Well, they did, yeah. Yeah, since my father started that. The way the business, the Jack Vincelli, which was my dad, started the landscape business, it came from my grandfather. My grandfather came over from Italy sort of the turn of the century.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a job working for a town called Westmount, and Westmount had little people that would love to play bowling green. They had a bowling green. They would play, and he would take care of keeping the grass green and keeping it cultivated properly and so on and so forth. Well, one day they came to him and they said that, can you make it so that we have, could you make a graft of what you're using and how you're using it and all this kind of, well, the poor man had no education and he couldn't make a graft to figure out what fertilizers he was using and what was happening, so on. So he told him, he says, I'm sorry, but I don't know how I can keep your grass green and I can keep it, you know, in good shape and so on, but I don't think I could do that. So they said, well, they had done that to him because they wanted to get rid of him. They had somebody coming over from England, and they wanted that man to do the job. So when he came over, my grandfather was relieved of that job, and so all the people that used to bowl on this bowling green, they all lived in Westmount. Westmount is a very wealthy people who live on a mountain. Westmount is a mountain, mm-hmm. And all these people immediately got a hold of my grandfather and said, look, you don't have to make any graphs or any reports or anything like that for us. We just want you to take care of our landscape around our homes. And that's where it began. Then my father came over when he was 13 years old, came over from Italy. My grandfather called him over. Mm-hmm. And when he was in Montreal, 2 months after he had arrived, his father was killed in a truck accident.
Oh no!
In a hit and run type of thing, and my father was on the other side of the street, and my grandfather said, "Stay there. I'll come and get you, and bring you across the street to beat the traffic."
Right.
And of course, you know, my father, the only traffic he knew was the lonely little mule or whatever that in the little town. There wasn't much traffic.
Right.
So anyway, this truck came along and hit my grandfather instead. And there my grandfather was lying on the floor, on the ground, and he had passed. He was dead.
Oh.
And my father was just 13 years old, and he was sitting on the curb next to his dead father. And a lady comes by in one of those kind of, you know, you own those kind of cars where she sits in the back and it's enclosed in glass.
Right.
And the chauffeur sits in front.
Right.
Just to get the picture. And she stops. She sees my father sitting there next to her dead father, next to his dead father, and she says, he only spoke Italian, he didn't speak any English, and she was trying to get some information out of him to take him wherever, where's his family or whatever, and had a hard time trying to figure it out, but finally my father got what she was saying and said that his name was Vincelli. Well, lo and behold, not too far away, down in another town located next to this Westmount, was a very poor section, and there was a grocery store that one of my grand uncles had, the Vincelli grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And so this lady, when my father said, my name is Vincelli, she remembered this grocery store, and she put him in the car and brought him down to the grocery store to try to find out what to do with them. And of course, they were all relatives, and they, you know, and so there they got back together again. But it was that my father came up. He then, now his father was dead, and so he had to, at the age of 13, he had to take over this landscape maintenance job,
right,
of these houses in Westmount. And it was really sad. He worked very hard.
I can imagine.
At such a young age, you know.
Wow, yeah.
And that's how it's, and you're talking about like 1909.
Yeah.
About that period of time. Yeah. And then, of course, as he grew older and so on, and he developed it more and developed the company into a full-fledged landscape construction company.
Right. So after you got your degree in landscape architecture, you went back home then, right?
I did. I went back to Montreal and worked together with my father, and we built up the business together, and I also opened a landscape architectural firm called Environ Plan Limited. ENVIRONPLA, right. Yeah, Environ Plan LTD. And that's when I started to get projects like the Expo grounds and the Olympics and so on and so forth. And then I did it was funny when we did the Expo grounds, we did a project for the the Agriculture Pavilion, which was a federal government project. And the federal government had asked me to do this project for them. And what we did was really something. We did a design, and we did it in such a way that it was, well, the sheep in the corn, it was not very creative. And when we presented this to them, they were very upset that we did not introduce computers and that sort of thing into this. And they said that, you know, we in the agriculture industry, that we work with computers just as well and so on, and that we're far in advance of the sheep in the meadow and the cows and the corn and that kind of stuff. So I took all my drawings and went back to my office and told my guys, and they said, oh my God, that's very embarrassing, because we had really screwed up. And so we started to really get into it, and we started off by saying, okay, where does energy come from? It comes from the sun. So we will develop from a sun acre and radiate off on this sun acre into these huge sort of plains of mounded areas with flat tops where things, the agriculture industry would flourish. And so in order to develop these mounds, we decided to build them up with hay bales. Now, hay bales, they were very afraid that something like that could just cause a huge fire.
Right.
Well, yeah. So we got hay bales, but with a certain specification. For instance, no alfalfa and no clover and so on, which were more combustible. And so anyway, we started to bring in hundreds of thousands of hay bales coming in on trucks from the United States and all over Canada. We bought unbelievable. They came in, and we started to build now these mounds with hay bales, because what we wanted to do was to create the slopes of these mounds in such a way that it would be about a 65 degree slope.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, the natural angle of repose for soil is 45 degrees.
Right.
After 45 degrees, it runs down and it just won't build up to 65 degrees. So the only way we could do that is by, on these 45 degree slopes, we would locate these hay bales in a step fashion, and then we put chicken wire mesh on top to hold the soil that we would put over the mesh.
Oh my gosh.
Eventually we would staple turf pieces, grass sods, onto this. Now, they just thought that was fantastic. But now, the problem was, how the hell are you going to cut that grass during the 6 months on a 65 slope?
Right.
You know, you just, nobody. So I called up Jimmy Klutz. And I said, Jimmy, I got a problem. I said, you know, and I explained this story to him, as I've just explained to you, and Jimmy said, Jack, there is a chemical on the market that in Atlanta, they were using it on the sides, on the side of the roads in Atlanta, called MH30. And this was a certain chemical that retarded the grass to grow. Well, I said, gee, that sounds good. This way they won't have to cut the grass during the 6 months of the expo time. And then I had an architect who was head of the whole kit and caboodle for the expo grounds. And he said, no, we can't have that. That's impossible. We don't want a fire, and this thing will turn into a real calamity, a mess. Well, Yoda, sure enough, one day, one Sunday, I get a call, and my poor wife picked up the phone, and she's listening, and they're saying that it looks like a fire has started in the bowels these hay bales. And I said, oh my God, that couldn't. Anyway, jump in the car, ran down there, and the Frenchman that had seen some smoke, steam, like really was steam coming out of the crevices in the soil and the sod pieces.
Right.
And it was the difference in temperature between down deep inside where it was hot.
Right.
And it was, the steam was coming up through. And so this guy, this Frenchman, he calls out and he says, smoke, fume. And so that got everything. And the fire marshals were running down there and so on. And when I got down there, I said, well, that's not smoke. That's steam, you bozo. Anyway, sure enough, they realized that that's what it was, and I got out of that one.
Well, let me ask you this. Considering that was essentially a monster compost pile, what happened to it after the expo closed?
Oh, that was all just taken away and shredded out onto land that had been growing whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, it was all used.
Well, that's great. Well, yeah, how would you sum up your School of Design experience?
My School of Design experience, well...
Having had all these experiences in life, so now that you can look back and kind of think about it.
Well, because, again, I go back to Lewis. Lewis was the kind of guy that made you stick your neck out so that you would understand and think about what you've got to come up with, a creative idea. You know, you got to come up with good ideas, and Lewis just knew how to tell us how to do that. He's the only guy that he could tell you that you're full of crap in his English brogue, and you agree with him because he knows how to tell. Yeah, Lewis is something else. He was absolutely an angel in my books, a guy that really knew how to show us and make us think for ourselves, really.
Would you say that's the one important thing to know about him?
Yeah, I would think so.
Well, what's the one important thing to know about Jack Vincelli?
Oh, I'm a bozo.
I don't believe that.
Well, I don't give up. My wife says you really are something that you just don't give up. I will keep on trucking.
Right.
Until it comes through, until I get what I wanted, you know, what I wanted to do. Well, I guess.
That sounds like a good way to be, I think. Well, I understand that you are considering a project now that you first designed over 30 years ago. Do you think today's landscape architects give enough consideration to the possible longevity of their projects?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I think what you're referring to, I was called recently by a real estate agent. And she was about to sell or try to sell to a potential client a project that we had done, that we had designed. It was a residential project on a lake in a very prestigious area at the end of the island of Montreal. Mm-hmm. And she calls me up and she says that in all the papers and all the planned stuff that she had that was handed over by the owners of the property, that here was this plan that I had done for that guy 30 years ago.
No kidding.
And it had a golf course on it, and it had a marina and on the lake. On the shoreline, it had, oh God, I just can't remember. It was just all kinds of things going on. It was a very interesting project, and the guy that I did the design for never built it. He got sick, and I guess he got sick when he found out how much it was going to cost him. Anyway, he never did build it, but here was this lady now that. She had this client who said that he was so excited by the plan and that he wanted to buy the property and that he wanted to do everything according to my plan. And I went out to meet the guy and so on. And so there we are. And we're waiting for him now to get his money together and buy the property.
Yeah.
So we're still waiting, actually.
So you're still practicing these days?
Well, I don't. That's a very generous thought that you're saying that I'm still practicing. I get involved. I mean, you know, this particular project, I know that, you know, 30 years ago you could do a lot of things, But now with the environmentalists and so on, you can't put a marina on a shoreline of a lake anymore. The shoreline has to be kept in its pristine condition and so on. So I don't know, you know, how much I'm going to be able to convince the city fathers that what I'm going to do for this site will be good. Mm-hmm. It'll come out well, but who God only knows. We shall see.
There's a lot of politics today that wasn't around in the old days, isn't it?
Oh, not absolutely. A big difference. Huge difference. But I had a lot of fun with people like past mayors of Montreal, like this man whose name was Jean Drapeau, and he was such a good man for Montreal. And when I was fighting with Mr. Tiber, the architect for the stadium, we would have these big meetings and huge, like something like 50, 65 people sitting around a table. And when Mr. Drapeau would come into the, he would always come and sit beside me, and he would ask me questions like, is that guy telling us the way it really is, Jack? What's your opinion?
And I
would have to tell the mayor that, no, he's full of crap, or whatever. But and he knew I didn't like Tiber, but he told me, he said, you know, I can't do anything about it because I've signed a huge contract with him, and to get out of that contract, it'll cost the city an awful lot of money, and I just really would like to try to just get along with this guy if we could. And I said, Mr. Mayor, I'll try my best, but I don't know. We'll see. And we never did get along, and he went back to France, and he never was called back again because he really knew nothing about Montreal and Montreal weather, and, you know.
Right.
And that was so important because the roof that he put onto the stadium was a terrible mistake. It was a film, a plastic, well, for better, I don't know, it was made of some sort of, I forget the name of, it was a plastic sheeting, mm-hmm, that was put over the whole thing, and then in various locations he had cables sort of pinching each piece of this ceiling, this roof, to if you wanted to open it up and to have it open to the sky and so on, that this thing would pull, these cables would pull this thing up and so on. But during the winter time, snow and ice would hammer away at this plastic cover, and it just didn't hold up. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I for one was one to say, I don't know, I'm not an expert in that, but I don't think that's going to work. He says, look, you stick to your flowers.
You know, that attitude.
When a man made a statement like that, I was fit to be tied.
I can imagine.
Oh, boy.
Well, this will be about my last question, I think, but this hits on, your story hits on a problem that seems to be prevalent in the landscape architecture profession today. How would you tell students that are you know, just now at that stage of entering the profession, how would you tell them to go about promoting landscape architecture as a viable and legitimate profession?
Well, you've got to really you got to really love that kind of work. Planning, land planning. You've got to know, you've got to feel. And, you know, really, I go back to Lewis. I think that I would send them all down to see Lewis. Because he knew how to tell you. He knew what was important and what wasn't important. I really felt that way. And I'm sure all of us classmates, I believe we all felt the same. Like when you talk to Warren Edwards and Burkhead and Jerry Turner, Lindsey Cox and all those guys, didn't they say that Lewis was a very important part of their life?
And they all had different ways of explaining it, and what I try to get to is like, you know, how would you translate what he was telling you? How would you translate that to pass it on to this next generation?
That's a good question. It's a real good question. I guess from my own experience, you see, like I said, like I started off this whole thing, that I was the son of a landscape contractor. And once you get into that kind of work, landscape construction, you fall into design and how to plan, how to design, how to lay out so that it will be not too expensive to build, because you know what it costs to build certain things. So I think that in my case, it was coming out of, you know, that rebirth, that coming out of landscape construction to teach me about landscape design, I believe. Mm-hmm. It was that way for me anyway. And to this day, it still comes back to when we plan or when we're designing something, and the first thing that comes to your mind, yeah, but what's that going to cost? Because reality is that your client is going to ask that question. He's going to say, oh yeah, fine, great idea, but how much is that going to cost? I remember, I had a client one time who he just wanted to beat me down on my fees. And so I would show him, I would meet him in his office and I would have a plan that we designed for this shopping center. And I put it down on his desk. And he looked at it, and he looked at it, and I knew what kind of guy he was. He was a guy that was not very interested. He just didn't like to pay fees. And I knew what he was going to try to do. So obviously he looked at the plan, and he says, well, I don't see anything creative here. I think that I could probably do better than this. And I said, oh, really? And he says, yeah. So, Leona, I took the plan, and I turned it upside down on the back, and there was a complete piece of white paper, right?
Yeah.
And I said to him, okay, if you think you could have done better and so on, I won't even ask you to do that, because you're not an architect and you don't know the, but what I would like you to do is you've seen what I have done. Why don't you just repeat it on this blank piece of paper? And he said, well, I'm not an architect. I said, yeah, I know you're not an architect, but you could just indicate it very simply, you know, where the parking area is and where this and where the entrance is, where that, this, that. And just indicate that on this paper. Just so he said, no, I don't know. I don't think I can do it. I don't know how. I don't think I have to do that. I have to know how to do that. And I said, look, I am going to leave you now, and I'm going to walk right by your secretary at the front entrance. I want you to call her now and get her to make the check that you owe me for my fees. And that's what I will accept, and then I'm out of here. Because I knew this guy just wanted to try to, you know, not
right
honor what he agreed to do, you know.
And that's part of the job too, isn't it?
And that is because you've got people that have other ulterior motives.
Yeah.
And you've got to try to offset them, or else you won't be able to put bread on the table.
Well, there's no doubt it's a challenging profession, isn't it?
Oh, the most challenging. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, some of the things that we did a project for the federal government. It was a research center. And when we did this, we were able to tell the architect. There was always a problem with the architect. Always. Yeah, they just think they know better. But we used to outmaneuver them somehow, some way. Anyway. And you know how we outmaneuvered them? Uh-huh. When we were able to come up with ideas that is cheaper to do than the way the architect would do it. Case in point, in this particular project, we told the federal government that you will not have to remove the excavations from the site in order to build the building.
Huge savings.
Okay? And they said, what do you mean? You've got to remove it. No, I said, you don't have to remove it. I said, there is a prevailing cold northwest winds that are coming from this certain direction. And we have to use that excavations to create mounds for us to locate these mounds in such a way to shield off this cold weather before it hits the building. Oh, come on now. That's a dream. Anyway, we said, well, look, you might as well ride along with me because it's going to be cheaper. It costs you more money to get trucks in here and to load up all of this excavations and take it away. Yeah, okay, they had to agree at that. So, if anything, I am going to create these mounds that one time someone called, what did they call, mice under the carpet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember somebody said. Anyway, so I said we will shape and grade these mounds around the building and so on, and it will be a pleasant sight. It'll be something good. Okay, so they agreed to do that. I got them halfway. So we went ahead and we dug out all this excavation, and anything that was not good, that was not good soil, we would take that away, obviously, and not put it back on the site. And then we would carry on, and then we would plant evergreen trees, pines, spruces, and so on, huge trees, and we would plant them on this mound, these mounds, to help protect against the cold winds coming up against the building. Now, after this was all done and built and so on, that winter, I got because the client is in this business of doing research into ways to better better whatever we can, however we can live in this, on this planet. And so they did all of these checking where the cold winds were coming from, how they were going up against these mounds planted with these evergreen trees and so on, and how much of that cold was hitting the building. And they saw that it was so much less that it, and they went down into their books where that the federal government said that this was, had to be done on all federal buildings, because it was a tremendous saving. They found that they were heating by oil hot water system, and that they saw just how much they were saving. And this was something that no one had ever even, you know, would really get involved in.
Right.
And the architects, they would just, you know, they'd look at me and say, yeah, that's some of your pipe dream. Well, you will see what will happen. We're going to wait this winter and we'll see. And sure enough, and the architects, they didn't like me.
But that's, you won one for the landscape architects, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's wonderful.
I said, all we want to do is work together.
Yeah.
Now, we know certain things. And I said, and you know a few things. But we landscape architects know so much more. Mm-hmm. Because we were taught by Lewis Clark.
Oh, that's nice.
Yep. And I mean that. I mean that. He was a sweetheart of sweethearts. Yeah. And you tell him that for me.
I'm sure I will. Well, Jack, that's all the questions I have for you today. Would you like to add anything else?
Did Clark affect your practice is the last question you have here.
Okay, you want to answer that one?
I said immensely.
Immensely.
And I say, and I wrote down, I blame him for putting me on the straight and narrow path of what landscape architecture was really all about. He messed me up good.
That's right.
I have to throw that in there.
Very good.
And what was Clark teaching at the time? He was teaching landscape design, yeah. You met Lewis Clark as one of your professors. What year was that? Yeah, well, I think, was he there in 55?
He arrived in 52.
Oh, 52, yeah, that's right, a couple of years before.
Right.
Yeah. Who were some of your professors?
I think we covered all those, Jack, don't you?
I think we did, too.
Okay. Well, let's stop at that, because I think we've you've told some very interesting stories and
Oh, from different angles, from another angle, you know?
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Yes. Well, that's very nice, very good, and God bless
And thank you so much for doing this interview. I've enjoyed our conversation immensely.
Well, it was fun. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
Very good. Thank you.
Brought back a lot of good memories.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Take care.
You take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.